All right, so we're on the Sunday night experience of the Big Book, and what's today? October 1st. And we're celebrating our 9th year anniversary. We could celebrate it for a week, right? Because we celebrate birthdays for a week. So yesterday was we started on a Saturday 9 years ago, and Wednesday night was actually the day. And so it's helped me a lot. I hope it's helped someone else. Tonight, we are on the fourth step, and we covered some of the instructions on the resentment inventory, which is the first part of the step four inventory. And we got to the bottom of 65, and we went through the examples. Now, I read something, and I sent it to you, to a lot of people, about the ego and the devil. And because I've been studying, and I wanted to see what they thought demons were, you know, in the New Testament time. And we're on step four, and step four is really where we're looking at our ego. We're looking at our ego and what it's done to us. And we're going to look at all the lies that we've told ourselves that aren't true. And an ego is a consciousness of identity, individuality, and personal sense of self-importance. It's what I think I am. An ego is who you think you are. But the ego is really a lie because I'm telling myself something that I'm really not. And we're going to see how that ties into step four. And what's happened is I've lived on lies. The ego lies to me and tells me I need something or I want something and I must have it to be happy. And then I decide that I need that. So if I'm afraid I won't get it, or I get angry if I don't get it, and I've lived my whole life like that. And they talk about this man talking about resisting your ego. But what we learn in AA is to put it down on paper in our fourth step and see it. And then we learn how to, through God and prayer, to turn ourselves away from our ego. To turn away whenever we see it coming up and turn away from it to God with God's help. And we can see now, after you've done step fours through nine, what your ego looks like. And we read these three pages on resentment. All right, so we got this recording to work. So anyway, it says the third column is, in most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relations were hurt or threatened. So what does that mean? Why is that important to know that? Well, if you look at this handout on self, which I've given you, and it's on the, I've changed it. And what I've found is that when I look at self, and you see the three instincts of life, and this handout's on the site under resources and recovery, but I may put a few lines in here. We've looked at it before. If I'm self-centered, then I am threatened all the time whenever any of my instincts are, I feel like they're not going to be met. Now, who decides that? You see, that is what my ego is. My ego is this thinker I have that tells me what I need materially to be happy, or emotionally, or my ambitions. Who decides what my ambitions should be? I did. And so if they're not being met, I'm going to be threatened. So when I'm angry, I didn't realize it my whole life, when I was angry, it's just because I was being threatened. Now it says hurt or threatened. So when I get threatened, I get afraid, right? And then behind all anger is fear. And so I was the one that decided what my ambitions would be, what my personal relationships. I decided what I need for positive self-esteem. Anybody else do that? So really I wrote here what I want. So it says, I thought I could rest happiness and satisfaction if I managed well, remember? So I decide what I want in these instincts of life. And if they're threatened, then I get angry and I get afraid. And I was the one who'd set the ball rolling. Remember it says we saw that we set the ball rolling, right? They arrived. And so who told me what my ambitions had to be? You know, who told me I had to be a doctor to be happy? I did because I thought then mother would love me and everybody would think I'm great, and you know what? Nobody really cared. And we set ourselves up for this. And our whole life, we've decided what we need, and we do it all day long, and then we get threatened. So when we talk about the ego, this is what it is. The ego is what I tell myself I need in all these areas of life. Do you see how that works? And does it make sense now? Now, if I'm deciding what I want, and I'm in self, then I'm going to judge things whether I'm going to get them or not. And if anybody's interfering with them, I judge it, and I get angry. Anybody ever do that? If you do it, spell it right. And then if you're in self and what you want matters, you're in constant fear that you're not going to get it. And you see, I think until you do your fourth step and you put it down on paper, you don't really see this. And it's a lie. It's not really true. Nobody told me what I have to do for material. I've told myself. And nobody had to tell me what I need emotionally to be happy. Or nobody told me what my ambitions were. I did. Now, you could say, well, that's not good or bad, but it is when your self will run riot, which is what an alcoholic is. Your whole life, you've decided what you need to have, and you go around all day long watching to see if you're going to get it, or if somebody's going to take it away, or if it's you're afraid it's not going to happen. And then you harm people. So if you have self-centered, ego-driven life on what you want, your thinking is going to be wrong. And it's not true. And then you're going to take wrong actions. Now, why do I say it's not true? Because I told myself these things. Nobody told me. God didn't say, wake up, Michael, and get angry today because you had to wait in line at the food store. You see, why do I get angry if I wait in line in the future? Because I've decided that I'm Michael the Magnificent and I shouldn't have to wait because of my self-esteem, you know? And it all comes back to this. Now, until you do the four step, you put it on paper, you can't see it. You just see the anger, you just see the fear. But you don't see how you set the ball rolling. I don't know if that's helpful, but it really helped me. And this is what's called, some of these speakers, a false sense of self. They say the third column is your false sense of what you think you are. Mm-hmm. You see, I think I am my ambition. But who told me that? I think I am what I need from someone else emotionally. Anybody have any problems in relationships when they come in here? Anybody try to dominate or be overly dependent? Anybody have problems with self-esteem based on what you think people think of you or how they're reacting to you? And we all did that. And so you begin to see it in the fourth step. Now, if you don't do the fourth step, you'll just think it's them. You won't see the truth. You won't see how you cause the ball rolling by living on self. We read tonight, Brennan and I, about selfish is self-centered, the root of my troubles. So the root of my troubles is that I'm in self, and my soil, all my instincts of life are planted in the self-centered soil. And when I do that, I'm threatened. Now, if I get something I want materially, I'll be happy for a while, right? But then my ego will say, you need more. So you'll set up a new want list, or you'll be afraid somebody will take it away. Now, the steps and the whole program is designed to do this, to turn the sheet this other way. And now, instead of self at the center, I want God to be at the center. Now, why is it good to put God in charge of all my instincts of life? Well, one, I won't be in charge. Two, they'll be based on truth. Now, everybody will say, well, that's great, but you know, God's not going to pay my mortgage. Well, we say the third step prayer, and in it, we make a contract with God, remember? And it says, if I stay close to God and just do the work that God puts in front of me each day, he's going to give me everything I need. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, it may not be what I want. So I'll decide it's not what I want, so I just go back to the other page, and there you go. But if I just say, God, you provide everything I need, what's the role that you're going to give me today? We have a contract. I'm just going to be the person you want me to be. Now, if we do that, we have right thinking. And then instead of getting angry, we have love. Instead of getting afraid, we trust God and we have courage. Instead of harming others, we practice patience, consideration, compassion, and kindness. So I don't know if this is helpful to you, but this is what the whole deal is. And we start with step four, we look at this. And then what we want to do through the steps is destroy self-centeredness and live like this. And you see, we still have instincts of life, but we let God help us decide what we need, not us. And so if we're ever disturbed, we talked about that Wednesday night, it's because I've decided what I need in my instincts of life, and I'm upset about the situation, whatever's in front of me. And so I have to stop and say, I'm seeing it wrong, and I wrote a thought today, I thought it was good, and about putting on a new pair of glasses and changing the old pair of glasses. So I hope this helps. So that's where the third column, whenever I'm threatened, it's not the real me. I don't have to be threatened anymore. So therefore, I don't have to be angry. So it says, on our grudge list, we set opposite each name or injuries. Was it my self-esteem, which is my false self-esteem, security, what I wanted. And notice it says, our security, our ambitions, not God's ambitions, or what God thinks we need, or our personal or sex relations, had been interfered with. If anybody interferes with what I decide I want in my instincts of life, watch out. And it'll cause me to get angry and bothered and disturbed. And we went through these examples. So now that we've looked at that, it says, and I've looked at my grudge list now. So I'm going to look at it. It says we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was the world and its people are often quite wrong. So when I do my inventory list, I have a list of names of people I'm angry at. Well, I could see that they were all wrong and what they did to make me angry. And it makes a lot of sense to me. But how did it work for me? It didn't work. And to conclude that others was wrong was as far as I ever got. And the outcome was that they continued to wrong me in my mind, right? And I stayed angry at them. And sometimes it was remorse, and then I'm sore at myself. But the more I fought and tried to have my own way, the more I tried to get what I want, the worse matters got. And so the victor, and anytime I had victory, it only seemed to win, and it was short-lived. Do you see that? Anybody have moments when they felt great? And then everything worked, and then they disappeared. Now, when we used drugs or alcohol, we tried to reproduce those moments where we felt peace and good. You see, and that's why we turn to drugs and alcohol, because when I'm living on self and what I want, I'm threatened all the time, I'm upset, I'm disturbed and bothered, and I want to change the way I feel. So you see how this is all related to our obsession to drink. So it says, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. Anybody believe that? So a life which includes deep resentment leads to futile and unhappiness. So if I'm in self and I'm trying to decide what I need to live, and I set these goals for how the day should go or how people should be or how things should happen, then I get angry. And it says, to the precise extent that we permit these. So here's the sad thing. None of these instincts of life for me that I decided I had to have were really true, except in my head, right? And then it says, when I got angry because I didn't get any of this, then I permitted it, the anger, and I squandered all my life. So I decided I need to be happy, then I get threatened all the time, and then I get unhappy and angry, and I wasted my life. Did anybody else do that? You see how it works? And you can't see it till you really do your fourth step. And that's the real problem that we need to change. Not drinking won't fix that. Not drinking means that when you don't get what you want and you're angry and threatened, you're just pissed off. And so after a while, most alcoholics, it won't feel good, and you'll seek the ease and comfort of alcohol. But you won't say that. You won't go to the liquor store and say, I want a bottle of vodka because I'm living in self and I'm self-will run riot and I'm trying to satisfy my instincts of life. and I'm living on what I want, and I'm judging everybody, and they're all wrong, and I'm angry, give me a drink. No, you'll just say, your mind will say, you know, things, you just, you know, I need a drink. Your mind will just tell you that, and nothing can come between that. So you drink on a lie. None of that's really true. And so it says, we squandered the hours. I wasted so much time with anger and fear. Oh my, just, woo. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. So I want to experience God. I want God to direct my life. I want to have peace and serenity. I want to have a new personality. Now, that's what Dawn said. Well, this was my old personality. My personality is composed of what I think. And my personality was how I wanted my instincts of life to be fulfilled. Nobody said to somebody, wake up and this is how you're going to need your emotional needs today. You decide that. Why do we say on page 86 in step 11, we have our plans for the day? Well, they may be self-centered plans. It says, before you begin, ask God to direct your thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, and self-pity motives. So that's just saying, don't let me pay any attention to any of this that I think I need each day, because it's going to make me miserable. And so I want to maintain and grow my spiritual experience. Here's what it says. Now, it's subtle. It says the business of resentment is infinitely grave. Now, infinitely, is there anything more than infinitely? And grave is bad. Now, if you don't understand that, because we're alcoholics, it says we found that it is fatal. So this is going to kill me. Now, it's going to kill me in several ways. It's going to separate me from God. And then I'm living without any power. And it's going to be fatal, because when I live like this, I'm not going to have any spiritual peace. And I may not drink, but my life is going to be bad. There's no guarantee, no way around it. There's absolutely no way it's not going to happen. Like we say, people are going to drink again. Well, we really should say, if you live self-centered and you live like this, things are going to be bad. And they're going to get worse. People talk about bottoms, hitting bottom, and they think it's circumstances. Well, if you live like this, your bottoms just keep getting worse and worse and worse. And it says, for when harboring such feelings. Now, I didn't understand this for a while. You know what a harbor is? We just had the hurricanes, right? Well, they took all the boats and they put them in harbor. They put them in a safe place, protected. So what does an alcoholic do? An alcoholic takes these resentments that are fatal to him and he puts them in a safe place so that we harbor them so nobody can take them away. Don't come between alcoholic and their justified resentment. They're not gonna be happy. You can't talk to them. You cannot actually ever reason to an alcoholic when they have justified resentment. They won't listen. And it says, this business is infinitely great fatal. When I harbor these, why is it fatal? Because I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The sunlight of Spirit is the power of God. I've shut myself off from God. Now remember in step 4, we're looking at the things that block me from God, right? And the thing that blocks me from God is my anger and resentment based upon my self-centeredness, based upon me deciding what I need in my life to be happy and to be okay. And remember, when we do the second step proposition of fear, what are we supposed to write all over our house? What I want doesn't matter. If we stop getting attached to what we want, we won't get, it will have lose power over us. That's good, I never said that before. If we're attached to these things, they have power over us. And if we can unattach ourselves to these things, then they lose their power. So the insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. With us to drink is to die. And I think most people who, quote, go out or whatever you want to call that, they're just filled with resentment. They haven't done their steps and they drink again. So now it says if we want to live. Does anybody want to live? Raise your hand. Everybody wants to live. Good. Then you have to be free of anger. Does anybody think that's a good idea?
Yes.
Now, it's right here on page 66. How many meetings have you gone to where people are talking about resentment or anger and this and that and going on? And right here in the book, in 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs, it tells us how to be free of anger. Now, I've heard a lot of speakers on the steps, and they do 4 steps, and they do a beautiful job, and they go through the dynamics, and then they go right to their mistakes. And they skip through these 3 paragraphs. But these 3 paragraphs were really the key for me, for my spiritual growth. And because I had a lot of anger. Now, it doesn't say that we don't get angry, does it? It says I want to be free of anger. I don't want anger to have power over me anymore. So I can get bothered and disturbed. We talked about Wednesday night, the spiritual axiom. So when I get anger or bothered, I don't have to keep that. I can be free of it. Now, it says the grouch and the brainstorm. Brainstorm doesn't mean smart like it does now. It meant rage when they wrote the big book. Any alcoholics ever have rage in this room? Probably not, but it may be the dubious luxury of normal men. Well, remember I talked about mouse turds the other day, so we can go over and rage over mouse turds. Stop it. The dubious luxury of normal men. But for alcoholics, these things are poison. It's poison if we're angry. Somebody said resentment is you take me taking poison hoping you'll die. Has anybody ever heard that before?
No.
Well, it's true. So we're going to turn back to the list, and it holds the key to the future. So has anybody in AA come in here and want to have a future? Right? Well, if you want to have a future in AA, you do have to do the work on step 4, and you have to do the first 3 columns to get to this list. Why does it say the key to your future? Because when you have this list, you're going to be able to see how to be free of anger, and then you won't have resentments dominate you anymore. Remember, they said resentments is the number one offender. So it says, I'm prepared to look at the list from a different angle. That's why when you come in, you're full of anger, right? You have this list of a bunch of people or things you're angry at. Now you're going to look at it from a different angle, and you're going to see that the world and its people dominated me. Anybody see that? They dominated me. They were my higher power. So I thought I was trying to fulfill my instincts of life and get what I wanted. What I really got was angry and had all these people dominate me that I got angry at because I wasn't getting my way. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, because sometimes it's just in our minds, had power to actually kill me. So how can we escape? We saw that resentments must be mastered, right? Anybody agree with that? So how are we going to do it? Well, it's right here in the big book. We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So this was their course. So this is what they did. And I do this all the time, and it works when I do it. It's absolutely guaranteed. Sometimes I don't do it right away, and then I have to remember, and I'm disturbed and bothered, and I have to say this. It says, I'm going to realize, I see the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. They may not be. But perhaps they are. And what do they mean by spiritually sick? Well, they have their own instincts of life, and they're at the center of their world, and they're trying to fulfill them the way they want them. And the other thing is that I say perhaps they're just human beings. Perhaps they have a personality. And that's where the Lord's Prayer really helps me, because it says, Our Father, we're all God's kids. And it says, though I don't like their symptoms, and they may have symptoms, and the way they disturbed me, they, like ourselves, well, look at this, we're sick too. So people are people. They have their personality. And we have to learn to accept, and then we have to learn to practice love and tolerance and patience and consideration. So people are just people. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. So whenever I'm bothered, I say, well, they're just human beings. That's just who they are. God, show me the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully give a sick person. And I ask God, and remember when we ask God in the big book, it's a petition. It's a prayer of expectation, but because we're coming from a position of humility. When a person offended, I say to myself, this is a sick man, how can I be helpful to him? I'm already changing the way I see him. I'm gonna practice love, patience, tolerance, pity, and I wanna be helpful. And then here's the prayer. It's very complicated. It says, God, save me from being angry. That's it. Now, it doesn't say, and I know people pray for people they're angry at, and I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's in the Freedom from Bondage. It was in the second edition on how you pray for people you're angry at. That may be great. If it works for you, great. But I just want to show you what the big book says and what's true for me. It says, God, save me. I need to be saved from my anger. Not them. I need to save me from my anger. Save me. Why? Because if I'm angry, I'm separated from you, God. I have no power to live. Save me from being angry, thy will be done. Now, we avoid retaliation or argument. Anybody ever do that? We try. Why? Because it doesn't work. And we learn. If we learn whatever we retaliate or argue, it doesn't work. It says we wouldn't treat sick people that day. If we do, I destroy my chance of being helpful. So here's the principles. One, I ask God to help show me tolerance, pity, and patience. Two, when they offend me, I say it's a sick person. What I say is they're just a human being. How can I be helpful to them? Three, God save me from my anger. Four, if it says if I cannot be helpful, all people, God, give me a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. It doesn't say the ones you want to. It says, at least, God, at least help me to show a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And if I have a kind and tolerant view, then they have no power over me. And this is how I'm going to be freed of the bondage of self. It's four paragraphs. And so, to me, this is the most powerful thing that's changed my life. And so whenever anybody calls me and they're disturbed, I say page 6667. And if you do it, it's guaranteed to work. This is one of those things that will never fail. And so I'm going to stop there. And then the reason why they have these five paragraphs in here after the three columns is because you cannot ever look at, quote, your mistakes in these resentment inventory if you still hate the person. It's not going to happen. You have to forgive them. You have to change the way you see them. So this is basically that helps you forgive anything. Now, somebody said, well, you know, what about Hitler and this and that? Forgiveness in the AA program, and probably spiritually in the Bible, doesn't mean you excuse. It just means you forgive, which means you're no longer letting them have power over you anymore. And then Brian mentioned it in the parking lot. I don't know, I guess he had to leave. But and he said, I mentioned it, and I got this from Sandy Beach, but he says, all the acts underneath which we can forgive everybody? What's the limit of our forgiveness on what somebody does to us? And he says, there was a spiritual teacher 2,000 years ago who said, on the cross, forgive them, forgive them. And so if we forgive everything in AA up to and including if we're crucified by somebody. And I really think that's true. Now, it doesn't mean you excuse them. There's a difference. But if you forgive them, then they don't have power over you. And if you're not forgiving somebody and somebody says you're not willing to make amends, go back and do your columns, say the prayers again. You have to be free of anger or else you can't be connected to God. And if you have one anger, it doesn't have to be more than one. It can take one. That can be enough. And so I urge you to study this and look at this and try these prayers and see if it works. And we'll open it up, and next week, then we'll look at our mistakes.